you'll see that America is still the land of the free.
Welcome to the Voice of Freedom, your national beacon of liberty. Now, here's your Voice of Freedom, Brent Johnson.
Bob Bard represented the 7th District of Georgia in the U.S. House of Representatives from 1995 to 2003 and was the 2008 Libertarian Party nominee for President of the United States. He practices law with the offices of Edwin Marger and runs a consulting firm, Liberty Strategies, Inc., headquartered in Atlanta. Bob occupied the 21st Century Liberties Chair for Freedom and Privacy at the American Conservative Union and is currently a member of the Constitution Project's Initiative on Liberty and Security. He serves as a board member for Privacy International. Former New York Times columnist William Sapphire called him Mr. Privacy. Bob serves on the boards of directors for the National Rifle Association and One Force, a company providing domestic and international security. He was the chief prosecutor during the Bill Clinton impeachment trial. I could go on all day with his credentials and achievements, and I hope, Bob, you will forgive me for any number of things I have left out. It is my pleasure to welcome back to the Global Freedom Report, Bob Barr.
Brent, great to be with you once again. The only correction I would have is I'm no longer occupying the 21st Century Liberties Chair for Freedom and Privacy at the American Conservative Union. I was honored to do that until a couple of years ago.
Okay, well, excellent. I tell you, it sounds weird to say Bob. I want to say Congressman. What's the proper protocol to refer to you these days?
Either one is very proper, but calling a former member of Congress the same as a former president or a former senator by that title is entirely appropriate from a protocol standpoint. So it's not inappropriate at all to refer to me as congressman, but certainly as friends. Bob is fine. So either way, Brent.
Great. Now, before we get into the real nut of what we're going to talk about, I just had a question, because as I was looking over some of your material, I was not aware that you had served on the board of One Force. Are you, by chance, in a position to shed any light on the degree of corruption that exists in the private security industry with companies like Blackwater and now Z leading the way with its influence-peddling antics and web of multiple corporations?
The problem, Brent, I think, is the manner in which our government has entered into agreements that insulate many of these companies from any sort of liability, which is, I think, inappropriate. It's not that there is inherently something wrong with utilizing private security companies to supplement the security needs of the State Department and other federal agencies operating in foreign lands. But Congress really needs to look much more carefully than they have in the past, at the scope of the immunities and protections that are granted to some of these companies.
I have a soundbite that I took from an interview with you a while back in which you said Congress essentially has no backbone to do anything about these issues. Do you still feel that way?
They certainly haven't exhibited much in recent years. That's for sure. I am hoping that the incoming Congress, in which the Republican Party has regained the majority, will exercise and exhibit a great deal more interest in these issues and backbone in actually addressing problems than the past several Congresses have. And, you know, that goes for the particular topic du jour, the powers of TSA and how the American public is having their constitutional rights infringed by what the TSA is doing. I'm hoping the incoming Congress, beginning in January, we'll take a hard look and ask some very tough questions of TSA and actually amend federal law to rein in the agency.
And, yeah, I want to talk about some specifics there. I have one more general question for you, if you will, Bob. You're about as staunch a privacy advocate as there can be in a country and world that has all but cast aside privacy. U.S. and U.N. officials have both said on numerous occasions that privacy is an outmoded concept in today's world in which terrorists have access to high tech. What do you say when you're faced with such an argument concerning personal privacy?
Privacy is the foundation of liberty itself, Brent. Our framers recognized that, and that's why they incorporated the notion of privacy, which is, in essence, the power of an individual to be free from outside control. That's the essence of privacy. Our framers understood that, and they incorporated that notion in ways that are apparent if one but looks, for example, at many of the provisions in the Bill of Rights. The Fourth Amendment, most particularly, which protects us against unreasonable searches and seizures and requires that search warrants be founded on probable cause, that reflects the fundamental notion of privacy. The First Amendment, as well, for example, that guarantees in essence, the privacy of one's religious thoughts and religious practices and one's political beliefs is founded very clearly on the notion of privacy. Ayn Rand, Brent, had it right when she wrote in her great novel, The Fountainhead, back in 1943, I think it was, that privacy is the essence of civilization. It's the process of setting men free from the power and control of other men. And for people nowadays, Americans in particular, ought to know better, but for Americans nowadays to say, oh, we'll just give up our privacy for security, is discarding the very foundation of liberty itself.
And I would have to agree with everything that you have said there, and it leads us right into this discussion, because if privacy is not outmoded, if I have the right to privacy and I have certain Fourth Amendment protections, how is it that the moment that I enter an airport, suddenly this goes out the door? And I'm not only asking you in terms of your own personal viewpoints, but you were a congressman, so you were a lawmaker, and you were also a prosecutor, so you were an officer of the court. And the courts are backing all of this stuff, and what has happened to my Fourth Amendment when I enter an airport?
If you listen to John Pistole, the current head of TSA, you've surrendered your fundamental Fourth Amendment rights just because you have exercised your freedom to travel by air. The Supreme Court many years ago, Brent, as I'm sure you know, but some of your listeners may not, the Supreme Court many years ago declared very clearly that the right to travel, the freedom to travel, is a fundamental index of liberty, a fundamental component of liberty itself. Yet today, people have sort of fallen into this notion or this belief that we can only travel by certain modes of transportation if the government gives us permission. That's absolute nonsense, and it's anathema to the very notion of liberty. If you take away a person's liberty or freedom to travel, you have taken away their liberty. You don't surrender your liberty simply because you choose to travel by air.
What you're saying makes such perfect sense, but what drives me crazy I'm sure you know all the stories. You know, we've been getting all these stories about the insanity going on, how people are being treated in the airports, and I have not heard of a single legal action addressing the question as to whether or not how it is that when I walk into an airport, suddenly the Constitution doesn't apply. Suddenly I have no Fourth Amendment protection.
These matters need to be addressed in the court, Brent, and they are going to be, at least in the near future. There are two court cases that have been filed, one by EPIC, the Electronic Privacy Information Center in Washington, D.C., led by a very strong privacy and constitutional scholar, Mark Rotenberg, and by the Whitehead Institute, the Rutherford Institute by John Whitehead in Virginia. Both of those organizations have, within the last month, filed very strong challenges to the process and the procedures the TSA is implementing and operating under here. And both of those lawsuits have raised constitutional Fourth Amendment challenges to what TSA is doing, as well as other rulemaking and procedural challenges. So I think at long last, we will in the near future start seeing some court decisions, and hopefully will result in a much clearer position that TSA cannot simply take away a person's Fourth Amendment rights and say the government has a right to subject you to a highly invasive and clearly unreasonable search simply because you've chosen to fly by air.
Now, let me pose a hypothetical situation. Okay, now, first, I am not a great believer that the courts are going to come and make a decisive decision, because they almost always seem to leave wiggle room to get around it. But let's assume for the moment that we get a legal action, a court comes out and says, absolutely, the TSA cannot do this, not in the name of national security or anything like this. People have their basic rights. You cannot force them either through this potentially dangerous body scanner or force them to subject themselves to what you're doing. Okay, now the president comes out hypothetically and says, based on the threat of terrorism, I'm issuing an executive order overriding that decision. Now, I know it's not supposed to happen, but in today's climate, I'm sure you would agree, it could happen. If such a thing occurred, what would be the recourse?
A further challenge. Unfortunately, Brent, you're absolutely correct. Presidents, certainly going back in modern times, at least to Harry S. Truman in the early 1950s, in the case in which he attempted by executive order to nationalize the steel mills at the beginning of the Korean conflict, presidents have shown a great propensity to try and usurp powers that they do not have, and to take those powers from either the people or the legislative branch. So, yes, I can see that happening, and unfortunately, it would require further court action, and I would hope that organizations like the EPIC that I mentioned and the Rutherford Institute and perhaps the ACLU and some others would challenge it as a separation of powers problem and as an unconstitutional power grab by the president. It certainly is not unreasonable, Brent, for either the airlines themselves, that is through their management of the airports, or for the government to take reasonable steps to assure that commercial air carriers do not have persons bringing weapons or explosives on board. But what we've been seeing is the TSA subjecting people to unreasonable searches without any basis to believe that the particular person is bringing a weapon or an explosive on board. Very different from the explosives and metal detectors that are, I think most people, and I would concede, are a reasonable effort to protect the public. Beyond that, the government has to have an articulable suspicion that somebody is doing something wrong before they can subject them to a more intrusive search.
One of the comments from the chat room is that these actions appear now going to other means of transportation. It seems like they're starting to, you know, some of the bus stations and some of the train stations, they're starting to put these scanners out and they're starting to impose these checks. Can you comment on any of that?
I would not be at all surprised, Brent, to see that happening. We've seen it sporadically in the past. For example, after the Madrid train bombing back in, I think, 2005, there was the bombing in the British subway system a couple of years later. Based on those, there were efforts made by the governments to start looking in people's bags and so forth before they get on trains or subways. So I can see very clearly this being a logical step by the government power advocates to extend TSA's power to subject people to searches for using other modes of transportation.
Well, now, can you, what do you have to say about the, there's some interesting developments that I've noticed over the last week or so. We have a couple of prosecutors in San Mateo and Santa Clara County, California, who have said they're going to be standing by tomorrow at San Francisco and San Jose International Airports. And if they see somebody working for the TSA who appears to grope, they will arrest him. There is, of course, the National Opt-Out Day protest that is loosely being organized, asking people to all of them say, I will not have the body scanner, and pretty much shut down the system. I think that parents should tell their children to cry. I mean, really cry, because crying children are photo ops, and they'll end up on all of the mainstream media shows, and it'll,
you're right about that. Drawing attention to what TSA is doing by people opting out is, you know, that's fine. I think what you and I are saying, certainly what I'm saying and what I hear you saying, is that though that the fundamental question is more important than simply what happens on a particular day. What the TSA is doing is constitutionally defective, constitutionally impermissible, and people ought to object to it on that basis. I think subjecting somebody to an intrusive, privacy-invasive, demeaning hand search is improper as well, unless the government has an articulable reason to suspect that you've done something wrong. I also agree that going through one of these nude body scanners has an additional problem, and that is the potential for a health hazard.
Oh yeah.
So what I urge people to do is to opt out of the full body naked body scanner. Now, if that then subjects them to the hand pat down, so called pat down, you know, I think that's improper, but at least you're not subjecting yourself to a health hazard.
Well,
what I'm hoping that these court cases will do and what Congress will do is stop this process of subjecting people without any reason to suspect they've done anything wrong to either of those modes of searching.
Well, now, what do you think of the idea of prosecutors actually arresting TSA agents for groping?
It's going to be difficult to do that. On the one hand, I'm glad that local prosecutors are saying they're going to look very carefully at this, and some of the information that's now coming out about the loose standards for hiring people for TSA. I was on a program earlier today in which one of the other participants indicated that it's entirely possible for people who have had convictions for molestation and other lewd conduct, but as long as the conviction was more than 10 years before, they can be considered to be hired by TSA. So in light of that and in light of some of what we've seen, I think it is very appropriate for local prosecutors to be involved to watch this stuff or to field complaints. It's difficult because you do, under at least those state misdemeanor or felony laws that I'm aware of, you need to show that there was, for example, a lewd intent, behind the touching. So it's a little more complex than simply did they put their hands in the wrong place. But I am glad to see prosecutors taking a look at this, and if they do believe that there is sufficient evidence there, then they ought to take some action.
And by the way, you're right. Okay, the burden of proof might be high, but that wouldn't stop them from having them arrested initially if they, you know, if the police believe they've gone too far and they've got instructions, you're under arrest. Take it up with the judge.
If the prosecutor and their professional judgment believes that, absolutely they ought to proceed.
There was a gentleman in San Diego, and he walked in a week and a half ago, and he said, I will not have the body scanner, and you will not touch me, or I will have you arrested. And so they wouldn't let him get on the plane. He was walked back to the ticket counter. He got a refund. And before he could leave the airport, he was stopped by a bureaucrat who told him, once you entered security, You may not leave the airport or you're subject to an $11,000 fine. Now, I have never seen anything in an airport that warns me that suddenly I'm a prisoner the moment I enter the security line.
This is outrageous, and it just indicates the extent to which the government is going to try and maintain control. That's what this all is all about, Brent. It's about control, the big C. On the one hand, I mean, they're inconsistent. On the one hand, they're saying, well, you're not detained, therefore we don't have to read you your Miranda warnings, for example. But then if the person does leave, they say, well, you're subject to a fine, which means you really are detained. They're trying to have it both ways, and I don't think that if they try that to prosecute somebody, for example, or to sue them civilly for the situation in which the young man in San Diego that you allude to found himself, I don't think that they would be able to sustain that.
I would hope
but
not.
But again, it's just an indication of how they're digging in their heels and trying to fend off any sort of challenge to their authority.
Is this $11,000 fine, is this a federal law, or is this just a TSA administrative rule, or do you know?
I haven't looked up the exact language of it, so I'll have to defer that question until we talk next time, because I was surprised when I saw that reported in the paper a few days ago as well.
Okay, so when you were in Congress, in other words, you were not familiar with anything of this sort that would, you know, that could be used that way.
Well, there are a lot of things that, I don't recall. I don't ever recall seeing something like that.
Yeah, that one's, yeah, I don't get surprised by a lot of this stuff, but that one definitely got my attention. Let me give you a website, folks. It's www.bobbarr.org. Now, there's three B's in that website. Bob Barr, three B's and two R's. BobBarr.org. And, Bob, it's never enough time with you. I mean, you know, you're always so interesting and so, so eloquent in your explanations, and I do appreciate it very, very much. And all of us appreciate you being out there acting on our behalf.
Well, thank you, Brent. You always address the fundamentally important issues. I appreciate the opportunity to be on. We have one other website. We have a website, optoutalliance.org, optoutalliance.org, optoutalliance.org. And people can go to that website and obtain a copy of a card, or they can get a free card that has their rights spelled out on the back of that card if they opt out of the full body, naked body scanner.
Oh, fantastic. I will make sure that both of these go as links on the Global Freedom Report website.
Very good. Brent, thank you as always for your work on behalf of Liberty.
And the same to you. Thanks so much, Congressman Bob Barr. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this edition of The Voice of Freedom. Opinions expressed are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the views of Truth and Freedom Radio Networks, Freedom Broadcast Group, Incorporated, or our sponsors. For more information about your freedoms and liberties, or to contact Brent, just log on to our website at www.freedomradio.us or call 1-888-385-3733. Join us next time for another lesson in liberty on The Voice of Freedom.
America, land of the free, right to life and liberty. Open your eyes and you will see.